Aleph Amid Aleph, the top. We learned yesterday that there was a statement of Ze'iri that if the mafrekes, the neck bone of an animal or a bird, or a person for that matter, as we're going to talk about soon in the Gemara, is broken, and along with it, most of the muscles around it, then the animal or bird is nevela. So it's not even a matter of being trefa, it's flat out nevela to the extent that even that touching or carrying it will make a person tummy. So we discussed that in light of a Mishnah that talks about Malika being done with a knife, which is incorrect, and Rava had pointed out in that connection, well, in that case, then when Malika is done from the back of the neck, you're first cutting through the mafrekes, and presumably you're also cutting through roi vosa, most of the flesh over there, so the bird's nevela by the time you reach the simonim, what's the point of doing the Malika, what's the point of cutting the simonim at that point in the first place? So Abaya said, well, so what? By an oil of sa'oif, you have to cut through both simonim. You can ask the same question. Once you cut one simon, the bird's already considered dead. What's the point of the other one? And Robert tells him, fine, but there you have a mitzvah havdalah, as we're going to talk. In today's Gemara, you have a mitzvah to separate the head from the body. What about you don't necessarily have to separate the skin, as we're going to talk about soon in the Gemara. In fact, the skin doesn't have to be there. That's different. Anything that has to do with shchita has to do with melikah. Since the simonim are relevant to shchita, then therefore they're relevant to melikah. But the skin is not relevant to shchita. Also, therefore, the fact that you don't have to break the skin and remove the head completely doesn't necessarily have anything to do. So the Gemara says, Mikomakum Kasha. Well, the bottom line is we have a question on what Ze'iri said. Ze'iri is telling us that once the mafrekas and most of the flesh around it is cut or broken or whatever, then the bird is nevela. And doesn't Rava have a good point? What's the point then of doing Malika of any of the simonim afterwards if by that time the bird is dead? So the Gemara says, Omar Rava. So Rava says, Ema. So you have to say then, necessarily, we're going to have to say, Kein hu oisa. This would be how you have to do when, Ema, v'chein hu oisa. This would of necessity be what you do when you do Malika. Choisach, shedro, mafrekas, beloy roi vasa. It would necessarily have to mean that you cut through the spine of the bird and the mafrekas. This is the shedra, meaning the spinal cord, mafrekas, meaning the neck bones, below the vosser, but without cutting through the majority of the flesh. You would have to do kind of like an angled cut, sort of, so that you're getting the mafrekas and the chota shedra, and then you're going on, and then you're going sort of sideways over there to reach the simonim. And that way you're not impinging on Ze'iri's roi vosser, and that way the bird is still considered alive by the time you reach the simonim. And in fact, he saw the Reb Zera when Reb Zera came up to Eretz Yisrael, Ashkechele Rabami. He found Rabami, the Yosef Akama, Lala Hashmaita, who was sitting and saying over this discussion, this din of Ze'iri, Omalei. And Reb Zera asked the same question as Rava did. If the bird's already dead, what's the point of Malika? And there also, Eshtoimam Kishar Chada, Rabami had to find an answer. So at first he was stunned for a while. The expression Eshtoimam Kishar Chada comes from a pasuk in Daniel, where Nebuchadnezzar tells Daniel about a strange dream he had, and it turned out Daniel realized that this is a dream that portends a very bad thing that's going to happen to Nebuchadnezzar, and he's stunned for a while, like, how is he going to answer without offending Nebuchadnezzar? So he uses it in a half dozen places as a figure of speech, like when one of the Amoraim asked another one a very strong question, and the other one is like stunned into silence for a while and can't think of an answer. And then eventually, so he was like that for a while, and then finally, Omale, and then finally, Rabbi Ami says, Ema, kachoisis, you have to say, like Rava came up with the answer, choisach shedra mafrekas, v'loy roi baser, necessarily it must be that you're cutting through the spinal cord on the spine, the neck bone, without them, the cervical vertebrae, whatever, without cutting through roi baser, because you're right, if you were to cut through roi baser before you reach the simonim, then the bird's dead by that point, the bird's nevela, and there's no point in Malika. And the Gemara says, Tanya Nami Hachi. In fact, there's a braisa that says exactly that. Ketzet mok and chatas ha'oif. How do you do Malika to a chatas ha'oif, where you only have to cut one simon? Chosach shedro mafrekas v'loy roi vosser. You cut through the spinal cord and the spine without cutting through the majority of the flesh. So you have to be careful to avoid cutting the majority of that. Ad shemagil avesh te'lakona. Until you reach the esophagus or the windpipe. Once you're reaching, once you're cutting through the neck and you reach that point, then you cut through the coin with this, all this is, remember this, with the coin string nail, remember, he cuts through that one simen, or he doesn't have to cut through the entire thing, he just has to cut through the entire, he just has to cut through the majority of it, same as by shchita, where you only need the majority of it. And only that one, only one simen. Because as we're going to learn, as we're going to go on to learn in the Gemara over here, when it comes to a chatas oif, the pasuk says v'lo yavdil, you're not allowed to divide it, and therefore, and if you cut both simonim, then in effect you've divided. Then in effect you've divided the head from the body, even if the, in fact the head is still a little attached by the rest of the muscles and by the skin, like we said before. Nevertheless, that would already be considered that you've divided it, and you can't do that. So now at this point, now at this point, when you're cutting that simen, then now you can cut the rest, now you can cut most of the flesh over there. Because now already you've done the proper malika, you've done the one simen, and therefore at that point you can cut the rest of the flesh. The one actually discusses in Zvachim is that you do have to do that at that point, as well. So, in fact, when we said before that Ze'ili says if you broke the mafrekas and most of the flesh, doesn't mean that that's the only, if it's both of those, is it nevela? There is a Rishon, the Eshkol, who says that, and the Baal Amor also holds, that says that just doing the mafrekas, in other words, so what are we saying? You would have to have all three, that for the animal, for the bird to be truly dead in that case, and that would be what the Gemara means over here, that you have to cut most of the flesh, because otherwise you have the mafrekas, you have one simen, but you don't have roi boser, and therefore you haven't completed the job yet, as opposed to the Baal Amor and the Eshkol hold that just the mafrekas and the simonim is good enough. So then you have some discussion. Okay, so what's the point of cutting coins to them, of cutting the rest of cutting the flesh over here? In any case, the point is that you can only do that after you cut the simon, because again, if you do it beforehand, then like Ze'ivi said, the bird's going to be nevela already. And the Braise continues of what we see. In other words, clearly, that the Braise is saying, like Rava said, and like Ramami said, that you have to only do Roy Vosser only after you've done the one simon, the windpipe, or the esophagus. Otherwise, the bird's nevela before you reach that point. Over Oila, when it comes to an Oila Sa'oif, there you have to have two simonim. So then, Shnayim, or Roy Shnayim, then you have to cut through both simonim, or the majority of both. Now, like we learned yesterday, it is true that after you cut through one simen, the bird is dead, as it usually is by shechita. Nonetheless, though, there you have mitzvah sabdala, there you do have a mitzvah to divide them, and therefore that means that you have to cut through both simonim. Okay. So therefore, so we see that this braisa says exactly like Rava and like Rav Ami say, that you have to cut through roi bosa only later on. You can't do it before you do the simen, otherwise you have a problem. So now the Gemara asks so much, but we have to ask this Braisa that we just quoted, which opinion of Tanurim does it follow? Namely, we're going to have a machloikus in the Gemara soon between the Chachamim and Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon. How exactly is the malika of an oila sa'oif and a chata sa'oif done? So we have to ask this braisa, who does it follow? Is Mani, I Rabbanon, if it follows the view of the Rabbanon, Ha'ami Shnayim Dafka, they say it's not enough to do most of two simonim. They hold by an Ola Soif, you have to absolutely do through the entire two simonim. And yet the braisa is saying that if you do Rav Shnayim, it's good enough. So it can't be following their opinion. The I Rabbalazab Rav Shimon, and if it follows the opinion of Rabbalazab Rav Shimon, Ha'omar Rav Shnayim, he says that it must be only most of the two simonim, and it can't be all of them. He holds, as we're going to learn in the Gemara further on, at the bottom of the Braisa, at the bottom of this Amud, and continuing on to the next Amud, that Rabbi Elazar ben Rabbi Shimon holds that at the point of that with an Ola Sa'oif, you have to have that the head should still be attached to the body, and attached for this purpose means that some of the simonim, that parts of the simonim still have to be intact. So therefore, he says that Dafka has to be Roiv Shnayim. So now, all Braisa is saying it can be Shnayim or Roiv Shnayim, one or the other. So it doesn't seem to fit either opinion. So the Gemara says, Eima Shnayim L'Rabbanon V'Roiv Shnayim L'Rabbalaz V'Rav Shimon. The one possibility is the Braisa is mentioning both possibilities. The Braisa is saying, when it comes to an Ola Sa'oif, you have to cut both Simonim. How much do you have to cut? According to the Rabbanon, Shnayim, the entire two Simonim. According to the Rabbalaz V'Rav Shimon, Roiv Shnayim. In other words, according to that way of looking at it, the Braisa is just saying generically, the difference is, Achata Sa'if, you're cutting only one simon, Ola Sa'if, you're cutting through, but the Braisa would be saying, at this point, we're not taking a position whether like the Chachamim or Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, but you should know both of them agree that both Simonim have to have a cut, have to have a cut in them. According to the Chachamim, it has to be the whole thing. According to Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, most of it. That's one way. The Boisema Halvahar Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon. Another possibility is that both statements in the Braisa are according to Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon. My Shnayim should Durmin L'Shnayim. What does he mean? When it says Shnayim, Oyroy Shnayim, when it says Shnayim, it means that you cut through a large majority of the Simon. In other words, it wouldn't just be that you should do, we've talked about before, Roiv is in principle 50% plus a tiny bit. You do 50.1%, it's good enough. But now, the Braisa would be saying, if we take it this way, then it means it's not just enough to do 50% plus, you have to do a large enough amount that it's very obvious that you did a majority. So, and then Roiv Shnayim would be that you do exactly 50% plus. So in other words, the Braisa would be saying, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, again, you're not supposed to cut through the entire Simon, but you can cut through 75% of it, or you can cut through 50% plus, and either way is valid. So, the point is then that we can make this Braisa work with the opinions of Tanoim that are known. Those opinions we're going to discuss further on the Omud, but first let's go back to this matter of the Mafrekas. So the Gemara continues, Amar Rabbi Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Nishbara Mafrekes, V'roi Basu Ima. When we talked about, before we were talking about an animal or a bird, so we said, as soon as the Mafrekes and most of the flesh around it is cut or broken, then immediately the animal or the bird is Nevela. In the case of an animal, that means that if you touch it or carry it, you become Tumah. In the case of a bird, as we discussed yesterday, there's no Tumah of Nevela of a bird by touching or carrying it, only by swallowing it. The moment the person swallows it, he and his clothing become Tumah. Now let's talk about it in terms of a person. If with a person, the mafrekas and most of the flesh together with it was broken, metame ba'oil, that person is immediately going to be. We know that a human dead body is metame, not just b'mago v'masa, but also ba'oil, when you're under the same roof as it, or when you're overshadowing it, or it's overshadowing you, whatever. So here, the person with that body would be metame right away ba'oil, even if the person is still moving around a bit. Mefarkas, as it's called, as we're going to have towards the end of the next parak, we're going to have a great deal of discussion of this matter of mefarkas, where often you have after an animal is shechted, for example, it flaps around for a little bit before, while as you still have, you know, the muscles are still firing, you still have a certain amount of chayus in the nerves, and it takes a few minutes for it to stop. Same way by shchita and bird. Anybody who's ever gone to kaparis knows how the birds are still moving around a bit after a proper shchita. So with a person, you can have the same thing. Because mafrekas and roiv basar was broken, and still he's moving convulsively. Nevertheless, Rabbi Yehuda is telling us in the name of Shmuel that the person is already considered dead, and he's already matame ba'oil. The im toimar. Now you're going to ask, why should you need roiv basar? Just the mafrekas being broken alone should be enough to be that the person is considered dead. V'im toima oise maise de'eli. What about from the case of Eli HaKoyen? What happened was, as the Gemara is going to quote the pasuk in a moment, that you have in Sefer Shmuel, the Jewish people had gone to war against the Plishtim. They took the Oren to the battlefield. The Oren was captured because the Yidden at that time had been doing very serious Averis, in particular also Eli's own sons, Chofni and Pinchas, had been doing some very major Averis, and therefore Hashem allowed the Oren to be captured by the Plishtim. Chofni and Pinchas were killed, and the Oren was captured. And the Pasuk describes how a man ran and came and told Eli, where Eli is sitting by the gate of the city of Shiloh, worried about what's going to be with the Oren. And then this guy tells him there was a tremendous defeat of the Jewish people, and your two sons were killed, and the Oren was captured, and Eli could take the news of a defeat, and he could take the news even that his own children were killed. But when he heard that the Oren was captured, he was so shocked that the pasuk says he fell off his chair and broke his neck and died. Now there it only says that his mafrekas died. Doesn't say anything about roiv basar. So you're going to say then that just the mafrekas alone is enough to make a person considered already dead. Who says you need roiv basar? The answer is that, and the fact is, Me'osa Maisa de Eli, in that case of Eli, Mafrekas Veloy Roiv Basar Havoy, and there it just says that he broke his mafrekas, his neck bone, doesn't say anything about him breaking the roiv basar. You could answer, the difference is, Zikna Shiny, the difference is because he was old, and with an old person, yes, breaking the mafrekas alone would be enough for him to be dead. The pasuk says Eli was 98 years old. So, but a regular healthy person, it takes more than the breaking of the mafrekas. It also takes roivosser. In fact, the Marshal, and it said the Marshal has a major pirush on all the sechna called Yamshal Shloima, and he explains, well, based on that, it would come out. In fact, Ziri's rule and Rabbi Huda's rule over here about the mafrekas would taka only apply to a young person where you need roivosser. But in fact, based on that, in fact, if a person is old, then in fact, mafrekas, even without roivosser, is enough for him to be considered dead. Dichtiv, as the pasuk says, by he cast tiras aron ha'lekim, when the guy who came told him, Chazal tell us it was Shaul. Shaul wasn't king yet at that point. He was just a private citizen from Shevet Binyamin. But anyway, when he came and told Eli, by he cast tiras aron ha'lekim, when he mentioned the Oren and the capture by the Plishtim, by Yipil Malakise Acharanus Badian Ashar, then Eli was so shocked that he fell off his chair backwards right next to the gate, by Tishova Machrakta, and his Machrekas, his neck bone, was broken by Yomos, and he died. He's got an Ishmachovid because the man was old and very heavy set, and therefore the fall killed him. The Ma'adana Yomtev from the Tosfos Yomtev points out the fact that he was heavy just explains not why the Mafrekas alone is enough to kill him. Not we said just old age is enough to do that. It means because he was heavy, he wasn't able to balance himself. If he hadn't been so heavy set, he might have been able to hold himself back and not fall. So in other words, the Zokin tells us why he died from only the Mafrekas. The Kovid tells us why he wasn't able to break his fall. But with a regular, with a younger person, then you need not just the Mafrekas, but Roivosser. In this connection, the Gemara mentions, here are some other cases where an animal, or for that matter, a person, can be considered dead without shchita or anything like that, even though when you have something that's done to it, even though it still may be moving around. So Omar Shmuel, I saw gistra. So Shmuel says another din. If a person were to make an animal a gistra, gistra basically means that you cut it in half. Rashi describes you cut it lengthwise or widthwise, or you cut off the entire neck, etc. Anything. Rashi points out the word gistra means anything that's divided in two. The Bartanura in one place explains that the word gisra is short for the word tre gisi, which means two sides. You divide the thing literally into two completely separate parts. So now Shmuel says if you made an animal into a gisra, nevela, then right away the animal is nevela, and again a person were to touch it or carry it, he becomes tummy. Amar Rabbi Elazar, and Rabbi Elazar says another din, or another case where an animal would be considered nevela even though it's alive. Nito yerech, if the thigh of the animal was removed, the cholol shalah, nicker, and the hollow of it is recognizable. The word nicker is in parenthesis over here, because in fact, you don't find it in Kisveyad, in Uri Prince or whatever, so, the Marshal added it in our Gemara over here, but the original Gersa was just veroy, the cholol shalah, that the means, so in other words, to say without the word nicker, it means nito yerach the cholol shalah. If the thigh was removed together with its hollow, in other words, together with the socket in the hip bone in which that hip joint is attached to. With the word nicker, it means even less than that, it means just the bone itself was removed, and you can see a very obvious hole over there. So therefore, so right away, then the animal is also nevela right away. In other words, again, even though the animal seemingly still seems to be alive, it's going to die very soon, and therefore, even now, when it seems to be alive, then already it has the din of Tumas Neveva. So that's what Rashi explains. In other words, we don't mean that the bone was cut off or whatever, and that you have some of the flesh left, and you have some of the flesh still remaining. Then you have, that would be trefa, that would mean nevela. We're going to learn in the third parak of our Masechta, we're going to learn about most of the genome of trefas, but we have some of them that we're going to discuss in the fourth parak. In particular, in the fourth parak, and in the ayins, we're going to talk about these various genin of when an animal's legs are cut. What areas would it still be kosher? What are its hind legs? What areas of the hind legs, if they're cut, make the or otherwise missing, make the animal trefa? What parts do not? But they were only talking about trefa. The fact is, a trefa, as we've been saying, a person is not tome if he touches or carries it. But here we're talking about where the entire thigh was missing and the muscles around it, and you can actually see a hole, you can actually see the socket, the hole in where the thigh was attached to. So now that would be enough to make the animal nevela, says Rabbi Elazar. So the Gemara says, what does that mean exactly? It means when the animal is lying down and you can see that there's something missing over there. But if not, in other words, if you just have part of the leg is missing, so now an animal usually lies on its hips and its thighs. But usually you have, when it's lying down and its legs are tucked in underneath it, you usually don't see its thighs. Most of them are hidden. If here there's so much missing that you can actually see that there's a missing thigh, a missing leg over there, then we're saying that the animal is nevela. But if it was any less than that, if it was only the lower leg missing, then the animal would actually be kosher. Those details about the lower leg and the middle leg and whatever, we'll talk about in the ayins of Amasefta, so in a little less than 2 months, that's the shem. So in other words, in short, with the back legs of an animal, you have three possibilities. You can have where parts of it are missing near the bottom, and then the animal is perfectly kosher. Then you can have there are parts where are missing higher up where the animal is treifa. And here we're talking about where it's missing so high up that the actual hip socket is exposed, and then we're saying the animal is already nevela. An interesting side point, by the way, that Sam Sofer points out, that may not be true of a person, because an animal has to stand on all four of its legs. So if one's missing, then it can't really stand, as opposed to a person is able to lie in a bed or something. In fact, the Marshal wonders, Taka is safer, Yamshal Shloima, why doesn't the Rambam brings this din when it comes to nevelas of animals? He doesn't bring it in connection with Tumas Nes. And the reason is, Chassam Sofer says that's exactly why, because by a person, this din wouldn't apply, even if a person's entire thigh is missing and the socket is exposed, he's not going to be nevela because of that. Trefer, he may well be. We're going to talk about in the third parak of Amasekta, we're going to talk about the din of Treifus. We'll talk about Bez Hashem. Tosfos has an interesting discussion over there. To what extent do the Treifus of people and of animals correspond? Do we say all the cases that we're going to learn in the third and fourth parak where an animal is Treifa, would the corresponding thing by a person automatically make him a Treifa as well, or maybe not necessarily? So the Gemara brings in this connection, another matter involving gistera, another matter involving an animal being divided in two, which eventually is also then going to lead us back to this discussion about the chasa sa'if, appointed of Elazar ben Shimon and the chachamim, where we touched on before that this machloek is how the malika of it should be done, and by an oila sa'if. So the Gemara says like this, t'nan chasam, we learn in a mission in Masechta Olos, when you have, the Torah tells us there are eight creatures, the shmona shrotzim, whose dead bodies are matame. Namely, you have like this. The Torah classifies animals, the Torah classifies life forms basically by how they move. You have land animals that have very obvious legs and you can see them walking. Those are classified as behemoths and chayas respectively. Behemoths if they're domestic, chayas if they're wild. Then you have anything that flies is called in Torah terminology oif, whether it's a bird, whether it's a mammal like a bat or whatever, it falls into the category of oif, or if it's insects, those are called sheretz oif. Then you have, there are creatures that are small. Then you have anything that goes in the water is a fish. Again, whether it's actually biologically, taxonomically a fish or not, a whale, for example, would still be considered a dog in halacha because it swims in the water. Then you have creatures that have no legs or very short legs, and therefore when they move, you don't obviously see them walking. You just see them kind of moving or slithering along. Those are called matura shrotzi. Among them, most shrotzim, the dead bodies of them are not going to be matame. A dead snake, for example, is not matame. A dead, other small creatures like that. But the Torah singles out eight shrotzim. We're going to learn about them more extensively later on in Amasefta, and in the ninth parak of Amasefta, we're going to talk about a lot of detail about them. So those, you have the Torah tells us their dead bodies are matame. So now, Tanan Hossam, we learn in a mission in the Masechta Olos, when it comes to any of these Shemot HaShratzim, Hutzur HaShehem, if any of their heads were chopped off, Afkin Shemafalkasin, even again, if the creature is still moving around, is still convulsively moving, Tneim, then they're right away in Batame because they're considered dead, because Nava Latar Shemafalkasin, the same way as, for example, a lizard might lose its tail, and the tail still moves around because it's still got energy in its nerves for a few seconds. Nevertheless, obviously it's dead because it's removed from the animal. So the same way over here. So Rashi says we're talking about the Shemona Shiratzim. Tosfos points out that not necessarily. It seems that it's a... Tosfos points out that it's actually in the Masechta Olos. The context is it's talking about animals. The Hemachaya V'oi, you know, the head was chopped off and right away they have, Tumas Neveva. So that's Macholik that's Rishonim. There's more Rishonim on each side of it, which case we're talking about. Are you Daf Shrotzin or animals in general? In any case, so my hutzu, so when we say they were chopped off, Rishlokisham or hutzu mamash, it means literally chopped off, the head is completely separated, that the head is almost completely separated from the body, maybe all that's left is they're connected together by the skin. But in other words, not just that most of the two simonim were cut through, we'd actually be talking about where more of it, basically the entire neck muscles have been cut through. Rav Asi, Omer Rabani, on the other hand, Rav Asi says in the name of Rabani, no, Kavdolas, Olas Oif, like the way that was an Olas Oif, where the head is divided, where the head is partially separated from the body, where, in other words, only one simon is cut. Where two simonim are cut, by an Olas Oif, you have two simonim, but not necessarily where the head is physically separated from the body. According to Rabani, in the name of Rabani, that would be enough to call, that Rab Asi, rather, in the name of Rabani, that would be enough to call it Hutzu Roshehen. And then already we say that the creature is considered dead. Again, here you have Machlokas, whether we're talking about Shrotzim, or whether we're talking about animals. A point that's brought up in that connection is because before we had, one point is that before we had, you've been saying Mafrekas Veroi Vosser is enough to make the creature Nevela. Here we seem to be saying that you need more than that. So it, maybe there's a difference with Shrotzim, which anyway, Shrotzim are smaller creatures. They have less energy in them, as opposed to over here, if we're talking about Behemah Hayav, then it would come out that these opinions argue with Ze'iri. Whereas if we say that here we're talking about Shrotzim, then there doesn't necessarily have to be an argument. Mm-hmm. So Tosfos, Lashitasim holds that in fact they are disagreeing with Ze'iri. Rashi holds they don't necessarily have to. Okay. So let's clarify what Rav Asi means. When he says, Kavdolas Olas Oif, we just said before, and we're going to discuss now in more detail that there are two opinions how exactly the Olas Oif is done. So Amalei Rav Yirmi Elo Rav Asi. So Rav Yirmi asks Rav Asi, what do you mean kavdolas olas oif? Do you mean kavdolas olas oif that are bonon? Do you mean the kind of way it has to be done according to that are bonon? Namely, that you have to cut through the entire two simonim, and then the loit pogitu. And in that sense, then you're not necessarily disagreeing with Rish Lakish. When Rish Lakish is saying that the entire head was removed, hutzu mamish, then that means that both simonim have been cut through. And then you would be saying the same thing, and you're just phrasing it differently. Or maybe you mean the kind of dividing the head from the body, which Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon defines as that, namely that you dafka don't cut through the entire two simonim, just the majority of them. We said before, it can be a noticeable majority, it can be a bare majority, and that alone would be enough. And then, says Rabbi Yirmiyah, then it would mean necessarily that Rabbi Asi, you and Rish Lakish necessarily have to be disagreeing, because he would say that only if both simonim are cut through entirely, whereas you would be saying even if most of them were cut through, then the creature was already considered dead. So what do you mean? Asi explains, in fact, I mean the way Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon says, and then in that case, yes, I am arguing with Rish Lakish. He would hold that the creature is dead only when you've cut through both simonim. I would hold the creature is dead once you've cut through the majority of both simonim. Ikadamri, another version clarified it more. Reb Shimon, a different version of the Machlokas. Reb Shimon Lakish Amar Hutzu Mamish, where again Reb Elazar Reb Shimon says, Reb Shimon Lakish rather says literally cut off, that both simonim have been completely cut. Reb Asi Amar Amani Kav Dabal Sayel Seif, Reb Elazar Reb Shimon Veroiv Shnayim, and Reb Asi would say in the name of Ramani, explaining more clearly, it means like the way Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon says the head is separated from the body, namely that most of the two simonim are cut through, but davka, not both of them, and that would be enough to be considered what the Mishnah calls hutzu roshehem, and already then the creature is considered dead, and tumas shrotzim or tumas nevela applies. Okay? My Rabbanon or my Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon, what do we mean, what is this machlokas of Rabbi Elazar ben Shimon? Let's analyze it in more detail. Netanya, we learn in a braisa as follows. We know you have chatas sa'oif and you have oila sa'oif. So now the first case, the Torah mentions, so Oyla Sa'oif, the Torah mentions in terms of a person voluntarily brings a korban. There are certain cases where a person is required to bring an Oyla Sa'oif, for example, a woman after she gave birth, but actually there it can be the Oyla can be an animal if she can afford it, but whatever. But in any case, there are cases where a person is required to bring an Oyla Sa'oif, but then you can bring it voluntarily. A Chata Sa'oif, of course, like any Chatas, is always going to be where you're required to. The first time the Torah mentions a Chata Sa'oif is in connection with a Korban Oyla V'Yored, where a person has done certain Averis that make him Chayav in an adjustable value Korban, which we've talked about here and there in we talked about in the Sefer Shavuos, we talked about it here and there in Seder Kodeshim. It's the subject of yesterday's Rambam Shlosh Prokim as well was one of them. In any case, the Torah says over there by the chatas oif the esasheni yasa oila kamishpa. The pasuk says that first he brings the chatas and then it says and the second bird he should bring an oila according to the rule. So what does it mean kamishpa according to the rule? That means kamishpat chatas behema. It means like the rule of a chatas behema, because this is a case we're talking about where a person should have asked to bring a chatas, and had he been rich and could afford it, he would bring a chatas behema. So now the Torah is telling us that when he's poor and instead he's bringing two birds, an ola and a chatas, then the chatas ha'oif has to be done like the chatas behema that was a few psukim earlier. So what is it now? So first let's define what that means. And then we're going to understand, and then we're going to understand what the Torah is trying to tell us. Rashi, a little further along, explains why do we have to say kachatas behema? Why don't we say that it means kachatas ha'oif, and say that it means like that the oila should be done like the rules of the chatas ha'oif. And Rashi explains because By the particular din that one of the particular dinim that we want to learn, it doesn't explicitly say by the chatas ha'oif, and then we only learn it from a hekesh. And as we learned in Zvachim, when you learn one thing from a hekesh with another in Kodshim, you then can't learn a third thing from the second one with a hekesh. Therefore, we need to learn it from the chatas behema, where we have it more directly. Tosfos has a long discussion about that, but by the chatas behema itself, we learn it from a hekesh, and Tosfos goes into a bit of discussion of what exactly the flow of the discussion over here is, what the Gemara meant to begin with when it says that we're learning that we're learning kemishpat chatas behema. It means like the rule of the chatas behema. In any case, but what does that mean? What does it actually mean, kemishpat chatas behema? But first, the Braisa says, after Oyla Kemishpat Chatas Behema, you're telling me that the Pasuk is saying that this Oyla has to be done like the Chatas Behema that it says before. Oyena Ela Kemishpat Chatas Oif. Maybe it means like the rule of the Chatas Oif, namely by a Chatas Oif. As the Pasuk had mentioned earlier, you can only cut through one simen. You're not allowed to cut through you don't cut through the second simen. Actually, I shouldn't say you're not allowed to. It's actually machlokas tanoim. Whether you're allowed to cut through the two simonim by a chatas, and you don't have to, or whether you're not allowed to. That I'm actually passing like the opinion that says you're not allowed to. So maybe we should say we should learn from the chatas oif that it means that you do malika of only one sin. In fact, the Shita Mukubetas adds the part of the question would also be that why don't we say the same way as you're not allowed to divide them by chatas oif, you're not allowed to divide them by the oil soif either. But here we're focusing not so much on that. Here we're focusing on how do we know that you don't at least that you don't have to cut through the second simon. So how do you know that not? But since the pasuk says by the Oyla Sa'oif earlier in Parshas Vayikra, when it talks about a voluntary Oyla Sa'oif, it says v'hikrivoy, he should offer it. So therefore, that's a meal. It meaning not another one. So thereby, the Torah is clearly making a distinction between a chatas ha'oif and an oila sa'oif, that they have different rules. Tosfos points out there's a different limud that we learn from the word v'kriboy, but here we're saying that the fact, not so much the fact that it says v'kriboy by itself, but the fact that it says v'kriboy and right after that it says molach, that he should do the malika. So from that we learn that there's a difference between the malika of an oila sa'oif and a chatas ha'oif. A number of other rishonim, Tosfos in Zvachim, and a number of other rishonim explain that the word v'kriboy wasn't even really necessary. So therefore we can learn the fact that it could have said v'hikriv, and then on top of that it says v'krivoy, so we can learn both things. Okay, anyway, the point is that since it says the Krivoi, so it's clear the Torah is making a distinction between Chach HaSa'if and Ola Sa'if. And therefore we can't possibly say that when it says Kamishpat means this Chach HaSa'if should be like the Ola Sa'if. So therefore, so of necessity here, Mani Makayim Kamishpat. So when the Torah says that you have to bring a Kamishpat, necessarily it has to mean Kamishpat Chatas Behema, it must be like the rule of a Chatas Behema. As we're going to go on now to discuss in the Braisa what that means exactly. Now, what does that mean? Ma Chatas Behema. Ain't above, first of all, Chatas Behema cannot be brought just from anywhere. Element of cholin. First of all, you can bring a chatas behema only from cholin money. If you have meiser sheni money, you cannot bring a chatas from it. In general, the rule is that you can't bring anything that you're required to bring for a different reason. You can't bring from meiser sheni money because meiser sheni money you have to take it to your shalayim and spend it on food. But it can only be something you can use it to buy a voluntary korban. We learned in Menachos, for example, about using the money to buy a korban shlomim or a korban toda and offering it. That you can do, but something that you're required to bring, such as a chatas over here, you can't do that. So the same way as a chatas cannot be brought from cholin, and ubayoyim, and a chatas has to definitely be offered by day, as it Rashi points out that it has, for example, by the chatas of Yom Kippur, it specifically says ki vayoyim hazeh. Later on, the Gemara is going to ask on a number of these things. We have other ways of learning, and the fact that we have to bring korbanos by day, we learn from a different pasuk. The Gemara is going to take that up later on Chafez Amud Aleph. Anyway, over Yodei Hayimonis, and also that the avodah of a chatas has to be done with the right hand, because the Torah specifically says that the kohen should dip his finger in the blood and daub it on the mizbeach. And we know, as we learned in Zvachim and in Menachos, that whenever it says the word kohen and it says the word etzba, so it means that has to be done with the right hand. So the same way, the Ola Sa'if also has the same rules. It has to be daft to be brought from cholin money and by day and with his right hand. Now Tosfos points out that anyway you can't bring an Ola from Maisa Sheni money anyhow, because Maisa Sheni is meant to be used for food, and Ola of course is not food. But if the pasuk says V'ikrivoi, maybe the Torah is telling you Gzeiras HaKosev, then in this case you're allowed to bring an Ola from maybe in this case where you're required to bring an Ola, you can bring it from Maisa Sheni money, and therefore the pasuk needs to tell you on the contrary it's not so. But again, as Rashi says, the Torah has all these rules are also true of an Ola Sa'if. But again, the fact that we have these dinim by an Ola Sa'if, some of them at least we learn from a hekesh with a chatas. And again, if you learn something with a hekesh, you can't then go and learn from it to something else also with a hekesh. And therefore, of necessity, we have to be learning from chatas behema. And again, Tosfos is discussing over here and saying that's not necessarily so. There might be other reasons we have to. In any case, now continues the Braisa. So far, in other words, we've established that when it says Rasa Sheni Yasa Ola Kamishpat means the Ola Sa'if of a Korban Ola V'Yerod, it has to be done like the rules of a Chatas Behema, namely that these same three rules that apply to a Chatas Behema also apply to an Ola Sa'if. But then continues the Braisa, if so, then you're going to say Malahalan Beroiv Shnaim Afkan Beroiv Shnaim. Maybe you should say the same thing then, that it means that just like by an animal, it's enough to cut through both simonim. We're going to have that in more detail in the next parak, Be'ez Hashem. We touched on it the other day. First, the Gemara had said, and based on one discussion over there, it sounded like only Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda would say that, but not necessarily would the Chacham agree. Then he said that maybe the Chachamim would agree to it as well. In any case, but the halacha is, when it comes to shchita, it's enough to cut through most of the simonim. So the same way over here, maybe it's enough to do most of the simonim, and you don't have to do the entire thing. No, Talmud Lema Umolak Vehikdir. Therefore, going back to the Ola Sa'if that's brought voluntarily, the Torah says he should do Malika and he should burn. So now what does it mean? The Torah tells us like this. It says Umolak he should do Malika Vehikdir and then he should burn. And then the pasuk says Vinimsa Domei Al Kirna Mizbeach that he should be squeezing out the blood onto the Mizbeach. Now the question is that. The question is, obviously, after you burn it, you can't very well be sprinkling the blood on the Mizbeach. So therefore, what it means is, so Rashi brings from Toras Koyanim, from the Medrash Halacha and Vayikra, that what it means is that Just like when you're coming to burn them, the Torah does say afterwards, the Torah says that you divide, you break it in half, and then you offer the head and the body separately on the Mizbeach. The same way, when it comes to the Melitah, also you have to have the head and the body separated. So therefore, if they're separated, it means that you have to have both simonim cut through, otherwise they're still attached. So Mahak Torah, Rosh, HaRosh Ba'atzme, Ba'aguf Ba'atzme, just like when it comes to burning the Olas Oif, the head and the body are done separately. That the same thing by Malika, the head and body have to be separated, and therefore you have to cut through the entire both simonim. So in other words, the flow of the pasuk is, and the procedure is, the Koyim does the Malika, he cuts through both simonim. Then at that point, now he has, the head is physically separated from the body. Maybe actually completely. Maybe he literally cuts them into two. Maybe he leaves the head a tiny bit attached by the skin or whatever. But then at that point, he presses out the blood from the body and then from the head onto the Mizbeach. And then he takes the body and the head and burns them on the Mizbeach. But we see, says the Tanna Kamma, you see from the way the Pasuk expresses it, or Moloch v'Hikdir, where it makes it sound like he burns them right away, and the fact is in between, there has to be the Mitzri Adam, there has to be the squeezing out of the blood, so we learn from that the head and the body should be separated during the Malika, just as they're going to be separated later during the burning of them. Rabbi Shmuel, and Rabbi Shmuel says no. We have to learn completely differently. All this time we're talking according to Tanna Kamma, we're saying when it says Kamishvat, when it says by the that you should do it Kamishvat, all this time we've been saying according to the Tanna Kamma that it means Kamishvat Chafas Behema, means we learned the dinim of it from Chafas Behema, and then we would have thought that it means also two simonim, most of two simonim is enough, and no, because there we learn from the Olas Oif. Rabbi Shmuel says no, the drash has to be as follows. Kamishvat, when it says by the Olas Oif, Kamishvat, means kamishpat chatas oif, means like the rule of the chatas oif. So not the chatas behema, which was earlier, but the chatas oif, which was right before it. Namely, the order in the Torah when it talks about the korban of the yard. First, it talks about the person brings an animal as a chatas. Then, if he can't afford it, he brings a chatas and an ola, two birds. And then the Torah describes what he does with the chatas oif, and then with the ola oif. So the Bishmal holds that when it says kamishpat, is referring to the last named thing, namely the chatas oif. Rashi explains that Rabbi Shmuel is going to learn the fact that he has to come from Chulin and has to be done by day. Instead of he's going to learn those in other ways, as in fact the Gemara is going to point out on Chaf Beis and Aleph that the Tanna Kamma also ought to be learning them from them, from those places. So Rabbi Shmuel learns differently. What is the comparison between Chatas Oif and Olas Oif? Ma Chatas Oif Mimul Oref. Just like the Chatas Oif, the Malika is done on the back of the neck, as we learned yesterday, Oref means the area directly behind the face, and Mul Oref would mean the rest of the neck, would be the rest of the neck going down from there. So, and there the Torah clearly spells it out by the Chatas Oif, that it takes place Mimul Oref. Af Olas Oif, Mimul Oref, the same way the Olas Oif, the Malika is done at the place that's Mul Oref. Because in other words, by an Olas Oif, the Torah never spells out in so many words where the Malika is done, so therefore we have to learn it from a Chatas Oif. Tosfos, by the way, disagrees with Rashi's point, where Rashi is saying that Rabbi Shmuel would learn the fact that it has to come from Cholin from a different source. Tosfos says not necessarily. The reason why the Chachamim don't learn it from the positive Zois HaTorah and Rabbi Shmuel does is because they say that the Zois HaTorah is not across the board. There are certain korbanos that there are even some voluntary korbanos that you can't bring from Cholin. In any case, so getting back over here then, so Rabbi Shmuel says, what are we learning from the Olas Oif, from the Chatas Oif to the Olas Oif? We're learning the fact that it has to be Mul Oref, that it has to be the back of the neck. But you're going to say in that case, by the Chatas Oif, he doesn't divide them, because the Pasuk clearly says V'lo Yavdil, meaning the Simen Echad. Meaning that with a Chatas Oif, he cuts through only one Simen and leaves and does not cut through the other Simen at all. Maybe by the Ola Sa'if it would be the same thing. He cuts through only one simon and does not cut through the other one at all. So maybe we would learn from the Chatas Sa'if to the Ola Sa'if from that. In other words, Rashi teaches out since it says in the pasuk v'lo yavdil by the chatas, and after all, a brood only needs, when it comes to shechita, you only need one siman, so it means cutting anything more than one siman would be called yavdil. So cutting one siman is not called havdalah, but once you do a second siman, then you shouldn't be doing it. And in fact, by shechita of a brood, you're not required to do the second siman at all, as we're going to learn in the next parashah. So over here, so Rabbi Shmuel says that the same thing. You could think if it says kamishba, and again, according to him, you're learning ola sa'if and chata sa'if as far as the fact that the malika is done on the back of the neck. Maybe also we would learn that you do only one siman. Tamadlima v'hikrivoi. Here is where Rabbi Shmuel again takes the word v'hikrivoi that we have by ola sa'if that's brought voluntarily. We're there again. V'hikrivoi is a mute, only it, not something else. So we see, in other words, that an ola sa'if and a chata sa'if are different. And an ola sa'if, indeed, you cut through only one a chata sa'if. Indeed, you cut through only one siman, but the ola sa'if, you do in fact have to cut through both simanim. So really, in other words, what exactly is Rabbi Shmuel learning from this pasuk, and what is he excluding? So we're saying he's learning the fact that you do malika on the back of the neck, but he's excluding that you cut through only one siman by a chatas as opposed to by an ola where you have to do both of them. Rashi and Tosfos both go into some detail over here of why Rabbi Shmuel learns that way. Why can't he say the other way around? Maybe we would say that we learn that both of them should be both simonim, and we would learn that there's a different place for the malika by one or the other. So Rashi explains that Rabbi Shmuel does agree with the Tanakama that you learn there does have to be a havdalah, and therefore the hekesh must be that it's the same place in the neck, and the Kriboy just tells us that there's a difference how much you have to separate and divide, and then Tosfos goes on and discusses in some long detail, and Tosfos ends up saying that no, Rabbi Shmuel would hold it's a svara. Once you have the concept of malika, then it's going to apply equally. The place of it is going to apply equally to chatas and ola sa'if. You don't really need a pasuk for it. Now the braisa continues with a third opinion. Rabbi Lozab Reb Shimon has a third way of learning the word kamishba, which now, that's what we were talking about before. There's the Tanakama versus Rabbi Lozab Reb Shimon. Now we're gonna talk about Rabbi Lozab Reb Shimon's opinion, and then therefore it'll be clear what we were talking about before, that Rabbi Lozab Reb Shimon holds that you just need to do most of the two simanim and not all of them, as opposed to the Chachamim said you could do all of them if you wanted. Rabbi Lozab Reb Shimon omer kamishpat. Rabbi Lozab Reb Shimon says that the kamishpat over here by the ola sa'if means kamishpat chata sa'if. It again means like Rabbi Shmuel had said, means that the rule of a chata sa'if. What it means is malach. When it comes to a chatas ha'oif, the kohen holds the head and the body together and squirts the blood toward the mizbeach, because unlike by an ola, where you just take the head and the body of the bird and press them against the mizbeach, and then press out the blood that way, by a chatas, first you have to squirt out the blood a little bit of a distance from the mizbeach. So the same way says Rabbi Lozab Reb Shimon, that just like by a chatas ha'oif, you have to squirt the blood from a distance. Afkan uichas b'roish v'guf maza. The same way by an olas ha'oif, you also have to hold them together and squirt the blood towards the mizbeach. So the Gemara says, "My karma." What exactly does Rabbi Lozab Reb Shimon mean with this limud? We don't actually find where it says in so many words by a chatas ha'oif, by an ola sa'oif, that you have to hold them both in your hand. How do we know? Maybe you could just hold one or the other. How do you know that you have to hold both of them? Such that we should be saying that we learn from that to a chatas that you have to be holding both of them. So what exactly is Rabbi Lozab Reb Shimon? What exactly is Rabbi Lozab Reb Shimon saying? There are different mafoshim, have different explanations, but the question is, but anyway, the Gemara says, Hochikar, now, what Rabbi Lozab Reb Shimon means is as follows, Malahalam, Chu Ochuz Barush, Beguf Humaze. Now, when it comes to a Chatas Oif, because you don't cut through both Simonim, the head and the body are still very much attached. So therefore, when you're holding the head, Chu Ochuz Barush, Beguf Humaze. When he's holding onto the head, which is still attached to the body, and that's how he's squirting the blood. So you, because again, you cut through only one stem, and they're still attached. Afkan, through ochos arosh, beguf, maze. The same way with the oil of soif, the head and the body are still attached with one simon, and that's when you're squirting the blood rather than, so the difference is it's not only one simon. You have cut through parts of both simonim, but you don't cut through the entire simonim. There still has to be that the head and the body are attached by part of the simonim. And only then do you squirt the blood, so therefore you see, in other words, that he's saying that you cut through only the majority of the simonim, but not all of them. So Rashi seems to be implying that, in other words, according to the Gemara, is actually changing the wording of Rav Elazar Rav Shimon's statement, not oichas b'roish v'guf, but oichas b'roish and together with it b'guf, and together with it the body is attached. In any case, the point is that according to Rav Elazar Rav Shimon, we're saying that you don't cut through both simonim, just most of them. Foshim deal with a point that in Zvachim, the Gemara explains Rav Elazar Rav Shimon says you could cut through both simonim completely if you want. And it turns out there's different opinions of what Rav Elazar Rav Shimon holds, and there's different ways of understanding. In any case, the point is, so Rav Elazar Rav Shimon is saying that you have to cut through only the majority of both simonim, but not the entire thing. So we see that, so therefore, when we said before, with our point of him, you don't cut through the entire two simonim, that's based on this understanding of him. Okay, so the Braisa finishes off. E malahalam simon echad afkan simon echad. Well, e malahalam besimon echad afkan besimon echad. Well, in that case, if you're going to make a hekesh because it says kamishpat, and you're going to say there's a comparison between chatas oif and olas oif, then you should say both of them is only one simon. Therefore, you have the v'kriva and olas oif, meaning that there is a difference. So, according to all three tanoim in this Braisa, you are learning that there's a certain comparison between the Olas Ha'oif and a different korban, but you also have a word v'hikrivoi, which means there's something unique to this korban. According to the Tanakhama, we're learning from the word kamishpat that the Olas Ha'oif is like chatas behema, as far as having to be brought from cholin and by day and with the right hand. But the difference is that with an animal, you only need to cut through roiv shnayim, and here you need to cut through the entire two pipes. And the Tanakhama says that's what you're learning. So you're not learning from Chatas Oif because V'Ikrivoi, and as far as Chatas Mehema, because the Pasuk is Molach V'Hikter. According to Rabbi Shmuel, Kamishpat means you're learning from a Chatas Oif, but the difference is, by a Chatas Oif, you're cutting through only one simon, and here you're cutting through the entire two simonim because V'Ikrivoi. According to Rabbi Elazar Rav Shimon, here you're cutting through, you're learning from Kamishpat, that you don't divide them, that just like by an Olas Oif, they're still attached together. Just like a chatas oif, they're still attached together. So by an olas oif, but on the other hand, from the ikrivoi, we learn that there's a difference. By the olas oif, it's only one simon, and by the chatas oif, it's only one simon, and by the olas oif, it's two simonim, but in both cases, only the majority of it, and not the whole thing. So therefore, when we mention on Chafalaf Amar Aleph, that there is a machloikas, whether you have to cut through all of the two simonim, or most of them, and it's a machloikas of the Chachamim, and Rabbi Elazar Rabbi Shimon, this is the machloikas that we're referring to. Okay, so then the Gemara is going to continue for the next little bit, analyzing the opinions of the different tanoim that we discussed, and why they're learning what they learn from each of the respective simonim.